Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller, and we told you about these guys before, the great group of Warriors Heart, and they do such a great job of veterans and their families. And Warriors Heart Admissions Director and Marine Corps veteran Michael Odell is with us here on the National Defense. Michael, how are you?
Doing good. Thanks for having us on the show.
Yeah, so Warriors Heart, we've talked about on a program before. Tell us exactly what you guys do. What's the mission for Warriors Heart?
Yeah, so our mission at Warriors Heart is to help bring 1 million warriors home. And what we mean by that, so we specialize in substance abuse treatment and PTS. And our focus is just on active duty military veterans and first responders and bringing them home. A lot of them, you know, they deploy, they serve their communities. They've never really felt like they were home. And that's our mission, to help them feel like they're at home finally.
Yeah. And that's so important now. I mean, especially with the number of suicides and the tough transitions for so many people, it's great that you guys are totally involved in that. What about your military service, Michael? Talk about that a little bit and maybe what your transition was like.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I joined the Marine Corps. I'm from a small town in Bandera, right actually where Warriors Heart is, our Texas facility. I joined the Marine Corps in 2006, and I served 4 years. And in that 4 years, we deployed twice. My first deployment was with 3rd Battalion, 3rd Marines out of K-Bay out in Hawaii, and we deployed to Fallujah, Iraq. And then my second deployment, which came like 6 months after that one, was to Ramadi, Iraq. And both of those deployments were your typical deployment. One thing happened on our second deployment that really kind of impacted us in a deep and very painful way. And our SAW gunner committed suicide about 1 month into that tour. And that really impacted us in a
wow. While he was deployed.
Yeah, we had been there about 1 month, maybe a little more. So we hadn't been there long, and we heard gunshots, and we all kind of woke up and went running around trying to find where they came from, and found our friend, our brother, our Marine, no longer with us.
Mm. Oh, that's so tragic. I mean, is that something that happens maybe more often than we know?
I think it probably does. This is the only instance I know, and it's, you know, because I was there and it's personal, but I know that it's not the first time, and we just hope it's the last, you know?
Absolutely, man. Oh, man, that's so sorry to hear that. So tough, certainly for you guys to go through as a unit too. And I would imagine that impacted just about everything else in your life after that, right?
It did. It did. So one of the toughest things was, you know, we were on deployment. So we had a missions to carry out. And so after that happened, we had a memorial service and then just pressed on. And so there was no time to process.
Right.
But, you know, we had another 6 months of deployment in Ramadi to go through. And then 6 months later, when you come back, it's kind of not that it's old news, but it's we're kind of way past that in a sense.
Right.
And so nobody ever processed anything really. And a lot of us started to struggle a pretty big way after that, especially with substance abuse for me. And that's kind of how my transition. So I got out of the Marine Corps after that. And my transition was not a good one, man. Not a good one at all.
We're talking to Michael Odell here in the National Defense from Warriors Heart, Admissions Director, Marine Corps vet. So let's talk about that a little bit, because there was a lot, not just the addiction, but a lot involved in a bad way with your transition back, right?
Yes, sir. So I got out of the Marine Corps in 2010. You know, quickly went to work, stayed as far away from the VA as I could, you know, because I didn't want to admit that I needed help.
Right.
And my addiction just continued to get worse and worse and worse. And it just, to fast forward to 2016, I ended up going to prison for 2 years for substance abuse. So, you know, there I was, you know, honorable discharge, combat veteran, served my country, struggling with addiction. Now I'm in prison because I just wouldn't admit that I needed help. Wow. And that was my transition.
Wow. And what was that like going to prison? I mean, that's a whole different deal. You know, you've been, like you said, you've been deployed. You've been this Marine that was honorably discharged. You did everything you could for your country, and now you're going to prison.
Mm-hmm. It was very tragic. You know, I had a young son. He was 2 years old. And there was no way around it. I had to go. But the beautiful thing about it is through that, you know, Marines are resilient. We're resilient, and we'll make it through just about anything. And I was able to turn that 2 years of experience into something positive and really turn my life around through that. But not everybody has that opportunity. Well, everybody has that opportunity, but not everybody takes it. I'll say that.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Michael. And a lot of people couldn't bounce back from that. I mean, this takes a special kind of person, special mentality, I would imagine, for that. How did you do that? Kind of rebuild your life and, you know, and kind of get back in charge of your own life.
So when I was in county jail, awaiting sentencing, I prayed about it. I prayed to my higher power, and I prayed for a 3-year prison sentence. The offer was 8 years. I prayed for a 3-year prison sentence. And I told myself and my higher power that if I got that sentence, I would sign the paperwork with a smile on my face. I would do my time and turn my life around. And when I went to court, that's what the judge offered me. And I knew right then and there that it was time to take control of my life. I had been given exactly what I asked for, and it was time for me to make a change. And that's what I did. I never turned back.
Wow. And the guys in the rest of your unit, that also went through that tragedy, I'm sure you guys have, you know, kept in touch. How are they doing?
We've lost a couple to suicide. A couple are struggling with addiction, and then a few of them are doing really well. And I actually just got a letter in the mail from a friend of mine's daughter. Well, my friend of mine, but his daughter, I met through them while we were stationed together, and she's graduating high school. And they invited me to her graduation. So that was really, really cool. Haven't seen them in many, many years.
You know, Michael, I'm so thankful that you're telling your story, because you're the only one that can tell it. But number two, I don't think people realize sometimes when they hear the numbers, you know, 20 a day, you know, all the statistics that are surrounding PTS and suicide, and they just don't understand how deeply that affects everybody. I mean, you talk about there are a couple of suicides just in your own unit, and that could have been you, right?
It could have been, and I tried. I tried when I got out of the military. I tried, man, and I woke up, my pistol was on the floorboard of my vehicle, and the driver window was shattered. And I was still alive, the bullet casing on the ground.
Oh my gosh.
I tried, and, I was not successful. Thank God.
Yes.
But it's very, people hear it all the time. Like you said, 22 a day, 22 a day, 20 a day. People hear it, but I agree with you. I don't think it sets in.
Right.
And it's almost unreal. Like, two of my uncles took their life, and they were military.
Oh.
It's not uncommon, and people kind of gloss over it until they have a personal experience with it. And that's when you see people making a change around things. And if this world that we live in, if they would just not have to experience it before they want to make a change, I think things would be just a different trajectory.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, there's always that, like you talked about, that stigma of getting help and admitting that you're having a problem. I think that's getting a little better, maybe, just because it is so prevalent. What do you think about that?
Yes, it is getting better. It very much is. We since 2016, we've served over 3,000 of our nation's heroes in our residential treatment center. And that right there, that's almost the same number of lives that were lost in Afghanistan in service to this country.
Wow.
And that number tells you that people are reaching out for help. And the stigma attached to it is getting less and less, but there's also stigma attached to the other side of that, the folks that did experience trauma that are okay. So there's like it's twofold.
Wow. We're talking to Michael Odell here in the National Defense, the admissions director for Warrior's Heart. So what exactly does Warrior's Heart do to deal with these issues? What do you guys do specifically in your program with Warriors to kind of take away that stigma and the shame of asking for help?
Yeah. So every warrior, as soon as they get to our facility, whether it's our Texas facility or our facility in Milford, Virginia, every warrior that comes to us gets welcomed home verbally by staff, multiple staff. Every staff that they encounter when they get here, we welcome them home. Some of them get it and some of them don't get it at first, but they do by the time they leave here. How our program is set up, it's a 6-week inpatient treatment center for substance abuse and mental health, PTS. Our primary is substance abuse. So our facility here is a 500, both facilities are over 500 acres, and almost every inch of the property is used for therapy and healing of some kind. Mm-hmm. We're a dual diagnosis program, so we treat both at the same time. Some people say my addiction came first. Some people say I drink because of PTSD. Some people say PTSD came. It doesn't matter to us. We treat the whole person in our 6-week program, and we offer a ton of clinical therapy, one-on-one clinical therapy, experiential therapy, EMDR therapy, and we even offer a wide variety of electives to help warriors get grounded and also to put some tools in their pocket when they get home. Like, we have a full metal shop, a full wood shop, a canine program where they could even leave here with an emotional support or a full service.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, that's so cool. Do you guys do anything with the equine therapy at all?
We do. Yeah, at our Texas facility. Yes, sir.
Man, I've seen that work wonders. And as a guy who has a couple of horses, it's just it's amazing to watch that work on people that are nervous, the people that are anxious, because horses don't care. You know, right?
Yep.
I mean, if a horse senses that you're afraid, oh man, they don't ask how you're feeling.
No, and you can try to hide it all you want. If a horse senses you're afraid, you're afraid.
Exactly. And let me tell you, I've been on a horse and been afraid. So I can validate that for sure. Boy, did Warrior's Heart get the right guy in you? I mean, that I can't imagine anybody with your background and what you've gone through being better suited to be an admissions director of Warrior's Heart. How did that come together?
The stars were in alignment. I throw it all up to my higher power. I was released from prison in 2018. I had a little less than a year of parole. And that was January 18th of 2018. And literally 3 months later, I meet one of the founders of Warrior's Heart at the CrossFit gym. I had an ankle monitor on my ankle for parole, and he heard my story. And basically all he heard was Marine Corps veteran, honorable discharge, addiction, prison, and sober. And he said, "Hey man, I've got a facility right across the street. I'd like to offer you a job answering the phones, helping people out." And I was like, "Sure, man, I need a job. I got it. Yeah. I didn't know what it was. I had no idea. I had no clue. I took a job is what it was. And what I found out was, this is my purpose. This is my passion. Right. It's my calling. Like, I couldn't think of a better place to be personally and professionally.
I mean, it's your mission.
Absolutely.
Hey, Michael, if people, the people that are listening now, whether they're listening on Armed Forces Radio Network, they're deployed, whether they're veterans that have recently transitioned back, what would you say to them if they're having those kind of thoughts that you had? And from a guy who's, and that's the other great thing about you leading this effort, because you've been there, man. I mean, it's one thing for me to tell somebody, don't do that. But I mean, from a guy who has been through it all, for you to make that statement, what would you say to people that are maybe unsure, maybe, or, you know, maybe they think they need some help, but they're not sure.
Yeah, man, great questions. So there's a lot of things that I could say and that I would say. And one of them is that I didn't think I needed help until I didn't want help. I didn't think I really needed it. I thought I could control it myself.
You didn't want anybody around you, I'll bet. I bet you didn't. You said you tried to stay away from the VA. You don't want to talk to anybody, I'll bet.
Nobody. And I rode that horse until I went to prison. And then I found out, oh man, maybe I was wrong. And so what I would say to somebody that's questioning it or on the fence or not sure, it's never too late to choose to live a better life. Maybe that means coming to treatment. Maybe that means going to a meeting. Maybe that means reaching out to a therapist for some help. You know, not everybody needs inpatient treatment, but if you're questioning it, you probably need some help, and there's nothing wrong about asking for it. That was my first sign that I had taken control of my life, was admitting that I had lost control of my life. That took strength. It wasn't a weak. My kids now, when they see me, they see strength. They see a good dad. They see positivity. They see a bright future for them. They wouldn't have been able to see that if I didn't change my life and reach out for help. It took strength, not weakness.
Boy, that's so well said. Yeah, because a lot of times that is viewed as a weakness. But like you say, man, that takes strength. It takes strength to not only know that there's something going on that you need to investigate, but it takes strength then to reach out and see where you are. You know, and I would encourage people to listen to that nudge. Listen to that, because we all have it. We all have that little nudge in our head from time to time that says, hey, you got to do something here. And if you just, I would encourage you just to listen to that nudge and take that next little step, because every little step is the, you know, that's a way to start, right?
Yes. The population we serve, firefighters, EMTs, active duty veterans, police, this population has been bred and trained to serve other people. They've not been trained to serve themselves. And if we can't take care of ourselves, we can't take care of those that matter most to us.
Right. Right. You know, that's what they tell caregivers. You know, if you're a caregiver, it's not going to do the person you're caring for any good at all if you're not able to take care of yourself.
Right. And that's the mindset shift that needs to happen and that we're trying to make happen. It's okay to take care of yourself. It's better for everybody.
Man, I bet your kids are so proud of you.
Yeah, they are, man, and they bring me to tears quite often, because I still, even though I've been sober almost 8 years, I consider myself to be successful in my mission and what I'm doing and all the things, but I still have those feelings of undeserving, like they deserve better than me, and I know that that's not. I know that it's not true, but some of those feelings, just like PTSD and trauma, sometimes they never go away. But what we get to do is learn how to process through them and identify what's true and what's false. I may have those feelings, but it doesn't mean they're true. and I get to work through that. It's a daily thing to change your life.
Yeah, it's not a one step process. I mean, I get it. It all starts at warriorsheart.com/connect, and I'm going to give out the 24-hour hotline number. It's 866-955-4035, answered by Warriors. You're going to be talking to somebody who knows exactly where you've been. 866-955-4035, or go to warriorsheart.com/connect. Man, it is such an honor to talk to you, Michael. Thank you so much for your candid story. Thank you for sharing all of that. And thank you for the work that you are doing for our heroes.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having us on the show. We're here because they deserve it. That's why we're here. And if we can impact even one soul through this show, and it was 100% worth it. We just want to help change lives, and the ripple effect of that is tremendous.
We'll be right back here on the National Defense.